I came into Skivvy in January of 2019. My first day at Skivvy was January 4th. I'm kind of lying because I actually came to Skivvy for my daughter, not for me, but for my daughter. And since she wasn't really interested, that was probably 2014 or something like that. She wasn't interested, and I wasn't going to stay for myself, because I hadn't figured that out yet. But if you go back to, 1990, I was in OA back then for a couple of years on the HOW program, and had I learned enough there to know that this was that I was a compulsive eater and that I needed support. But I got married in program. I met someone in program. We got married, and with the kids and the ex-wife issues and all the things that went on, loss of jobs. So I had to, our whole family had to move up north, and up north we couldn't find the meetings like we could down south. We ended up letting our program go. And so being a full-time having a full-time job and being a full-time mom and all of that, I ended up, the eating began pretty much with the first pregnancy, and then continued for a very, very long time. So I had gotten down to, the 150s. By the time I was married, I was about 165. And then in those years, where I was the full-time mom, full-time worker, doing that impossible job with a husband with a, displaced knee, not a knee, but a hip, that was extremely painful. And so a lot of stuff fell to me. And, it was my job. It was my job to do it all. And in that, I kind of let my program go, and I just ate because I deserved it. In my family growing up, I was the overweight kid. And, my mom was overweight, my dad was thin, my brother was thin, my sister was thin. So I was raised with the attitude of food as a treat, and food as a celebration, food as love, all these positive feelings. So, fast forward to being a new mom and having a stressful job, I really felt like I didn't deserve to have the food taken away. I felt like, the food was to take it away from me was a negative thing that I didn't deserve to have happen. And so I ate and ate and ate. I watched my mom's diet was diabetic, and but ended up being insulin dependent. I was for years pre-diabetic, thinking, ha, I beat this thing. All I need is the metformin. And that worked fine until it quit working and I started watching my numbers go up. And I had never considered bariatric surgery because I had known someone that was hospitalized afterwards, with severe infections and complications from that thing. And I figured that was just too risky. Just too risky for me. But when I went and had a fasting blood sugar of 295, I mean, I went, well, what the hell? This is a risky way of life. So why would bariatric surgery be any riskier? I don't know why at that time I thought that OA, going back to OA, was even far more risky. I think I was thinking that I really didn't have the time in my schedule, to take on another, project like OA. So I did the bariatric surgery, and you know what? It worked wonders for my diabetes. My diabetes went from, the 295 down to 150 down to, it stabilized at around 100. And that was like a perfectly normal blood sugar, fasting blood sugar in the morning. It was lovely, and it lasted a long time. And what was really cool about it is I could eat what I could fit in, and what I could fit in were the simple carbs and the sugars and things like that, and with no impact to my blood sugar for a very long time, for a couple of years. And I lost about 75 pounds in the process. My top weight was 330. When I had the surgery, I was at I got down to about 213 after surgery, and that was the thinnest I had been in decades at that point. I had the surgery at 56 years old. So I was eating and eating and eating and eating. So I at some point I started watching my blood sugars creep up and creep up and creep up, and then things got really, really crazy at home. My husband and my son bonded over alcohol. My son was 20, almost 21, and he could drink with dad. And so they started doing that, and they didn't do the party drinking. They did death drinking. You know, they would drink to obliteration, and that was an alien thing to me. You know, and I knew they were killing themselves, and so I was watching them kill themselves, eating like crazy. So not realizing that I was doing the same damn thing. I was killing myself with food while they were killing themselves with alcohol. I'm sure there's some universe where that makes any sense at all, but that's what I was doing. So I, at one point, my husband went into detox, and for some reason, just having that pressure off of me, it allowed me to raise my head. And that Friday meeting at noon over in Claremont, you know, that I had in my back pocket for 6 months, I had the courage to go. I had the freedom to go. There was something about that that released me to go. And so I walked back into the room, and that was January 4th of 2019. And I didn't get abstinent right away. It took a few weeks to do that. And the folks in that room, you know, that was my one meeting a week I would go to. And they pulled me aside, and I was crying. I was telling them I couldn't stop eating sugar. And you know, the dearest, you know, it was a woman named Sue M, and she asked me if I was abstinent at that moment. I'm like, it's noon. Yes, I haven't had anything to eat yet. Okay, let's make a plan for lunch. And now let's make a plan for dinner. And if you make it to the bed tonight, you'll have your first abstinent day. And breaking it down like that, I knew I couldn't be abstinent forever. I knew I couldn't put down sugar forever. But that whole concept of I can lay it down today. I can lay it down right now. I don't need to have it right now. Yeah, the thought occurs in my head, and it used to be a directive, but now it was a directive with, yes, you can do that, but maybe later. And just by giving myself that pause, that space, I was able to break that habit of, oh my gosh, I would have any kind of food thought, and I would have to follow through on it. It was like it was you know, like I was a robot or something like that. I had to go get it. I had a direct order to go get it. And that gave me the space to say, wait a minute, that sounds good, but I'm not going to do it right now. In fact, that's first abstinence I had. I included, you know, a round sugary treat that gets stuffed with fruit, you know, at one of my local shops. And I was going to have two of those a year as part of my abstinence. That was going to be legal for me. You know, there that we get to define our abstinence. I'm going to, you know, define mine with my friends over in Glendora. It's going to be great. And you know, what's funny about that is that the season came for that particular treat, and I would drive by, and there'd be 100 people outside waiting to get in. It's like, I'm not waiting in that line. And then I drive by and go, yeah, I don't feel like it right now. And then I drive by it, and pretty soon it just didn't even faze me. And at some point, I realized that if I went and indulged in that, it would make me nauseated. It would make me shaky. It would make my heart pound. That was really not the treat that I thought it was. So that, you know, so my beginning of this whole journey was, you know, in that room that you're sitting in right now. And the people I learned there, my first sponsor was from there, and she taught me things. You know, my life had been full of fear. You know, I would catastrophize and run movies in my head. And she worked and worked and worked with me on that. You know, do you want to have fear, or do you want to have faith? Do you want to trust God, or do you want to be God? And you know, that it changed the way I
thought about my life. You know, I was putting so much of my mental energy into my fear and doing the inventory and working with all those different fears. And my next sponsor, you know, I was really worried about moving to Oklahoma, and she made me write a list, you know, and I hate my writing assignments, but I did it. And then I looked at that list, you know, a year later after the move had done, and every single concern was addressed that was on that list. And not at all in the way I expected it to be. You know, we came to Oklahoma, and my disabled daughter has terrific care here. We came to Oklahoma, and I had no idea how I was going to get my parents here. And I got my dad here. And I was, you know, I was close by when he, you know, ended his life on earth here. You know, I got to be with him for his last days. It was amazing. Those were all, you know, I had huge concerns about it. And, you know, every single one was addressed and has been, you know, it's been amazing living here. I found an amazing intergroup here. So I still have, you know, I just came from an in-person meeting that had a group conscience. That's why I was late. But yeah, so there is a loving group here too. So OA is quite the fellowship. So I really wanted to hit on my relationship with my higher power, because I was one of those that thought I had one my whole life. My whole life I thought, you know, yeah, there was this big powerful God, and that guy was really scary. And not only that, but he was looking at me with disappointment because I was such a screw up, you know, and I didn't follow through on my stuff, and I wasn't perfect. You know, I was so far from perfect that, you know, he was just shaking his head going, you know, what a loser. And in this program, I learned that that's not necessarily true. And it was in a body image workshop that I connected with. You know, the way God looks at me is the way I look at my kids. And if I look, when I look at my kids, even when they're drinking, even when they're, you know, not acting their best, I still love them like crazy. I would still die for them. I would still, you know, take out a burglar for them. You know, Mama Bear would come to the fight for sure, you know. And that's how God is looking for at me. And that gave me something I could relate to. And not only is God looking at me like that, but maybe I can start looking at me like that. So this whole journey of self-acceptance really started here in OA. I had a little trouble going to church at the time, because the God that I grew up with and the God that I was meeting in recovery, they seemed like two different beings. And so I had this kind of double vision thing going on for a while. And I was okay with that. I knew that this God was big and powerful and could figure out my crazy mind, and it would be okay. And you know, things like, you know, my prayers really changed. You know, in the 11th step, it says we pray only for the knowledge of your will for us and the power to carry that out. That has turned into a driving force in my life, you know, and that the whole you consider your plans for the day and you lay them out before God and you look for the intuitive thought or a decision that really this life is meant to be thy will, not mine, because, you know, my higher power has a better vision than I do of how my life is supposed to be unfolding. And when I am upset about the way it's unfolding, I have learned to just wait and see, adopt a wait and see attitude about, you know, what's going to happen. It's not necessarily going to be the worst thing ever. And possibly this might be, you know, just what I needed. And if I take that attitude, then I'm looking for the good that's going to come out of something instead of having the pessimistic view and having to be guarded. And, you know, at this point, I really honestly feel that the worst I can face is going to be fine, because I'm not going to face it alone. I have a higher power that knows what's happening, and it is going to resource me, because I have been resourced for all kinds of things. I mean, we've walked my mom through colon cancer and passing away. You know, we lost my dad. We have had, you know, other diseases happen in our family, other financial worries and all kinds of things, and everything that I lay at God's feet, I have not been annihilated. What about that? I have not been destroyed. I have been given the resources I need just in time, and all I need to do is relax, take it easy, keep my eyes open. I have come to view God as, the unlimited love and unlimited power, that is, here for me and, can do that for each person, and is unlimited. So that's my view of my higher power, powerful, powerful being that would be so terrifying if it weren't tempered with love. And that love I see as the love of a mother, the nurturing love. If you look at my mom, she would, guard our instincts, so that we would live right and grow up to be good people and, make sure that we were fed and clothed and warm and had a safe place to sleep at night. That was my mom. And the love of a father, my dad was the guy. We had a guy breaking in, our upstairs window, and he was right there. If he had a baseball bat, he would have taken it with him. But, that protector, So I my view of my higher power is like that now. I feel like I'm supported, I feel like I'm nurtured, I feel like I'm loved. And there is such peace in that. So at these days, is that it? And is that time, or is that
No.
how many? Almost, right? So I can wrap it up.
Yeah, you got 4 minutes.
Okay, thank you. So yeah, that I can walk through whatever in this life and know that it's unfolding the way it should be, no matter how crazy it looks, and how I have a great imagination. I can imagine, some pretty wild stuff, but I can see how, there is nothing so massive that I could do that would derail God's purposes. There is nothing that I can instruct God on, So my prayers are really different. My prayers used to be, God, take care of this person, do this, do that. I used to be God's director. I had to retire from that. So I had to allow God to be the director in my life and to truly adopt that, your will and not mine be done. And, I can't tell you the kind of serenity that I've gotten from that. That, everything has turned into curiosity. How is this going to work out? And when I do get into a mood of looking at, how terrible it could be in the future, I almost always get this random thought that says, not necessarily. Not necessarily, it won't necessarily turn out like that. And it's like, oh, okay, I can put down that toy of obsession and I don't need to worry about that. So it is, this program is amazing. I think it's done, I have lost, I'm down 130 pounds from my highest, and I still need to lose more, but that's, it's going to be worked out. And one of the things I've learned is that the best predictor for the future is what's happened in the past. And I've seen what God's done for me in the past. And so I've handed in my scale, and we are going to be in this for the long haul. And I know sometimes weight goes up and weight goes down. And all I can say is my trajectory is in the right direction. And that's what I've got to share today. So thank you so much for inviting me.